Today's episode of the Retro Silent Podcast is proudly brought to you by Endanger Mice. For all the latest news and updates on the amazing Starquake remake, please check out www.endangermice.co.uk.
Basically, this is just like a little introduction to tell you what's going to be happening on today's show. First of all, I want to quickly say that, wow, I'm really impressed. It's our 25th episode, and we've got something really, really amazing planned. And the other thing I want to talk about as well, we've been going for a year. We first started the podcast last year, 2011, I think it was on the 18th of October. And our podcast and site's gone from strength to strength. Podcast-wise, we've got over 52 iTunes reviews, which is absolutely amazing for, you know, what we've achieved. And guys, yeah, so what we've got planned is we recorded the podcast. It was myself, Glenn, and Swainy. It's the first time we've all recorded together for the Retro Asylum podcast. Now, the audio quality isn't that great because in the room that we recorded at the event, sadly, it had a little bit too much echo, so I do apologize about that. I did try and fix the sound to the best I can, but fear not, we've got some amazing stuff. Not only do we talk about our experience at, you know, Play Expo, we've also got a superb guest, which you'll find out in a little bit. Right, so guys, yeah, thank you so much for your support and enjoy the show.
Not like this morning when I walked in.
Oops. Oh, sorry about that. I should have been a little bit more professional. Right, sorry about that. Yeah. Sorry, guys. I should be a lot more professional. My phone's going off.
Cut.
Hello everyone and welcome to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, the Retro Asylum. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and joining me to my left is...
Glenn83100.
And to my right is...
Dean Swain.
And today we've got a really, really special episode of the Retro Asylum podcast, and I'll tell you why it's a really special episode. Not only are we here at Replay Expo, which is in Manchester, we'll talk a little bit more about that, but it's also our 1 year anniversary that we've been recording, and that's the reason why you've got the three of us together. Now, we're recording this visually and audio. Now, for those who are watching this on YouTube, check out the t-shirts. What do you think of this thing, guys?
Really nice. How'd we get hold of these, Andy?
Well, basically, Swainy over here, he designed the logo, you know, when we first came up with the show over a year ago. So, this has been our little logo, and my wife helped me do it. Because my wife's an art teacher.
Yeah.
She basically had it all printed up. So it was a lot of hard work. I only managed to get a few t-shirts printed. And I've got to promote it. It's only $8.99. If any of our listeners would like one of these wonderful t-shirts, obviously if you're on the podcast, you can't see it. But how amazing is it, Dean?
Well, people think you're a part of the show, even if you're not. So if you're wearing one of these, do expect to get a lot of attention.
Yeah, I'm talking about attention now. Since we've arrived here at Play Expo and we've been wearing these wonderful t-shirts, why don't you tell the story of what actually happened? Right, we've been recognised a few times.
Yeah, we've had people coming up to us, but there was this the first occasion it happened, it was just me and Andy because Glenn didn't arrive until later on in the afternoon yesterday. And we're mulling our way through the crowds, and some guy has come running up to us. Retro Asylum, I listen to you. Are you Glenn? No, I'm Swainy. Are you Glenn?
And I'm like, no, I'm Andy.
I must say, I'm very, very privileged. But people like me on the show.
He did say,
everybody.
Like, Where's Glenn? And we're like, he's not here.
I'm at work making a living. Yes. I did eventually come.
Yeah, no, but basically everyone seems to ask for Glenn, you know. There are other hosts in this podcast like me. I'd like a little bit of attention.
And myself.
Hello everybody, this is Damien and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
Here we are at Replay Expo. Let me start then, Glenn. How have you been finding it?
I found it absolutely amazing. With all the games, consoles, all the arcade machines, and even the selling stuff in the shops, even though they're a bit more than it would be on eBay.
Yeah.
It's still really good to see the old games again, and even seeing the younger generation enjoying old games, because, you know, in the future we need to preserve this.
Yeah.
Retro gaming community. Yeah. So it's brilliant. I really enjoyed it.
How have you found it compared to last year's event that was held in Blackpool? How does this compare?
I think the venue's a lot better. It seems to be a lot more professional. Like last year it was in a hotel. It was still good, but the hotel wasn't brilliant, was it?
it wasn't the greatest. And the last year, me and Swain, we stayed in a little B&B called Hotel Alcatraz, which was a bit of a nightmare. So how have you found it then, Dean?
Yeah, as you both said, it's a lot more professionally presented. It's at the end of the day, it is a much better venue. Obviously, the big boys are here this year, Nintendo. EA. You know, so you've got a crowd who are here for the modern games because of Halo 4 and the new Metal Gear Solid plus the Wii U. But I do think that the retro side of things, the layout of it is much better than last year.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more arcade games.
Yeah.
And it's nice seeing, as Glenn said, the younger generation enjoying the games. There's kids out there probably from 5-6 years old playing on Vectrexes, ZX Spectrums,
and Commodore 64s,
Amstrads, you name it, it's out there. And just seeing people play these games who, they've probably never experienced this sort of thing before. Plus there's people on the arcade games and they're hugely popular. Don't get me wrong, they're free, but I think it just goes to show that an arcade in this day and age could still work if, an arcade could get hold of the right games.
Yeah. There needs to be a place like where people can go to, because arcades back in the days when I was a kid growing up, they used to be all over the place, your local minicab offices, chip shops, and especially near seaside resorts, they used to be, like everywhere. Places like Margate, Blackpool, Brighton, they used to be everywhere all over the seafront, and now it's just sadly doesn't exist.
The trouble is, I go to Bridlington and Scarborough quite a lot, and what they do, they have these machines you just put two peas in and you win a lollipop.
Yeah,
so by the time you put in a pound's worth, you pay for that lollipop for goodness how many times?
Yeah.
You have too many of those these days.
Glenn, you put in a pound to win a lollipop.
Yeah.
I can't believe you.
You could go to a pound shop and get it for 10 pence or something.
I want to quickly talk about my experience of this thing, and now I've talked to a few people all around the event, and some people are really happy the way it's gone, the direction. Other people like no, should have kept it retro. But the way I see it is that retro still is a niche sort of thing. There are certain people that like retro, and it is big, but not massively huge. But to keep an event like this going, you do need something like more modern, like the new Wii U, which is out here as well, and it generates more interest, and more people come along, basically. So I think it's fantastic seeing little kids play these things, people with their, kids. And it's an amazing experience.
See, I think that, I've been looking around, and I think the younger generation are taking more notice of the retro stuff than they are the modern game.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of the teenagers and probably guys in their early 20s on the modern games. They're all looking forward to your Halo 4, etc. But the younger generation, it's amazing just seeing them on these machines. I saw a kid playing Manic Miner earlier, and within seconds he had the hang of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And he got onto level 3.
Yeah.
And this is someone who, I doubt if he's played it before.
Yeah.
And it's just great.
It's just amazing. These kids weren't even born when these games got created, and it's just generation after generation later, they're playing these things. Yeah. Now, I want to talk about a nice little interesting story, because me and Swainy, Glenn, we travelled down from Essex, where we live. He came over in the morning, about 7 in the morning, and my wife drove us down in the car. Yeah. It was a nice little journey. We didn't hit traffic. And Tony from Retro Resistance, now, he's a maniac. I don't know how he managed to do it. He left the night before, which was a Friday, at about 11 o'clock, and he arrived about 5 in the morning, and then he sort of like stayed at the bus station for hours until it's opened. And then we text him on the way down, and it's like,
why did he sleep? He slept in a bus shelter.
Well, he slept on the coach down.
That's dedication.
That's dedication. So yeah,
now that is dedication.
It is completely. And we text him basically saying, we're on our way down. How busy is it? And he goes, oh, there's loads of people. There's this big, massive queue. And we finally arrived, and we saw the queue. It was huge.
It was.
Not like this morning when I walked in.
No. Basically, we got out of the car, we saw this massive queue, and then Tony said, oi, I'm in the queue, do you want to sort of queue with me? And I'm like, I said, Sway, this one, I'm not doing that, I don't queue. And then we just marched along, we got to the front, walked past this big massive queue, and Swainy went over, talked to the security guy, and he goes, we've got our press passes. And the guy goes, yeah, through you go.
I bet Tony must have thought, I've been waiting here since 5 o'clock in the morning, and these two people from my other podcast come along and just push in. It's not right.
See, that's the difference between Retro and Silent, basically. That's why we're the UK's number one retro gaming podcast. But, I mean, I have felt really, really special. I mean, how has it been for you? We've got our press passes, you know. So how does it feel this time round?
I've got to admit, this year we have been looked after, haven't we, by the press office here.
Yeah.
As you can see, we've got our makeshift Retro Asylum.
We've got a little Retro Asylum room here, so we won't get disturbed by anyone unless someone rings me, like previously.
Yeah, if it wasn't cut, who that is.
No, I think I should leave it in just for a little bit of adventure. So, and Glenn's got a press pass as well. So it's really nice as well that the three of us have finally got together for the 1 year anniversary of the Retro Asylum podcast. We started last year, I think early October. Previously, I had like another retro gaming podcast, 1HMPS Retro. I got a little bit disheartened. I left it, but I began to miss it. I missed recording with you guys. And next thing you know, we started this new show, which was episode 1. I recorded with Swainy. Right. How have you found our journey from 1 year?
It's been good. Positive feedback always helps things. And, you know, I think we've been a lot more professional this time around. And just a lot more enthusiastic about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm enjoying it still, which, as you say, last time round, you know, it felt like a bit of a chore.
It did, for whatever reason. It just didn't feel like fun. It didn't flow well. Wasn't happy with the product. But
becoming too much hard work.
Yeah, but Retro Asylum doesn't feel like work. It's a perfect opportunity for the three of us just to geek out. You know, we work. We've got real jobs. We do things. We've got family, partners and everything, and it's just nice just to have that geek out moment. How have you found the show progressing from episode 1 to where we are now, episode 25?
I found it absolutely amazing in a year's time how we got where we are now.
I
believe the show is getting better and better.
I think it is. We've had some interesting guests. I mean, we've had the Oliver Twins, we've had Colin Jones, we've interviewed a few people from other sites, like Andrew Joseph, we've had Lefarious. I mean, what's been some of your favourite episodes then, guys?
The Oliver Twins one was great, as was Colin Jones.
Yes, I like Colin Jones' one.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Darren, our forum moderator, the episode on that. I found that really interesting. In fact, all of the site specials with, you know, our community members being interviewed have been really good. I think what we've got right this time around is we're quite light-hearted. Obviously, we're not going to appeal to everyone out there. We do have our serious moments, and some of the interviews that are coming up, you should see that in a way. But yeah, I'm just really enjoying, you know, working with you guys and listening to other people's gaming attitudes and how they've got into gaming. It's intriguing.
Because that's the thing is, we have got an amazing retro gaming community because we are really, really busy. We've got our lives. it's hard to actually find time to, a lot of the time, to go onto the site. But every time I go onto the site, someone's posted like a new review, someone's posted something new in the forum, and it keeps on going. It's running itself pretty much. So what's been your favourite episode of our podcast, Glenn?
I liked the Colin Jones.
What was it about Colin Jones you liked so much?
I just liked when you talked about all the games he made. Like, he made, Rockstar Who Ate My Hamster.
Yeah.
Explained how he made all those games. It was absolutely amazing.
I mean, I've enjoyed doing these episodes, especially with these sort of like big retro gaming legends. I mean, normally before I do these things, I'm completely and totally shy, really, really nervous, and thinking, oh my God, these are my childhood heroes. I used to play these games when I was about 10 or 11.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I recorded with the Oliver Twins, you know, I couldn't believe it. I recorded one. We had to record for 15 minutes was the time limit I had. It went really well. Then the other brother showed up, and then I went, do you mind if we record a little bit more? He goes, yeah, why not? Then 15 minutes turned into half an hour turned into an hour and a half, and it was a great show.
Do I love about when you talk to the people who develop it, they would explain how they made the games, how they come across programming, and the learning curves they came across, and the people they worked with, and it's really interesting to get into how they did it. Like, the other day I talked to Jeff Minter. Now, Jeff Minter's known to make some really great games. The best game he ever made was Tempest 2000 for the Atari Jaguar. It was an absolutely amazing game. You know, it had brilliant sound, brilliant graphics. He really pushed the Jaguar to its limit. And I had the pleasure to talk to him the other day.
So what sort of things were you asking them? What did you say to him?
Well, I came up to him and said, do you know, you made the best game on the Atari Jaguar. And he came around and says, oh, thank you very much, you know. And I said, what was it like working with the Dremels or Jack Tramiel and Sam? And he says, oh, yeah, pretty all great to work with. He says he liked Leonard.
Yeah.
Tramiel, he says. He was the one writing to his games and his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such great talking to him.
Yeah.
And he said, the Jaguar was a brilliant system to program for, he said. But it's a shame people didn't program more games for it.
Yeah.
Because it was a good system to program for.
But speaking about Jeff Minter, like when me and Swanee arrived, because me and Swanee arrived early Saturday morning, Glenn arrived slightly later, we were walking along and there was Jeff Minter. What was he wearing, Dean?
A llama's head.
He was wearing
a llama's head.
He was just sitting there, sort of just playing the game
with a llama's head on. It was quite bizarre.
So yeah, you know, because of llama software and everything, people knew instantly that was him. But it was a bizarre sight, you know?
It was.
It's just something you don't see everyone sitting there, you know, with an animal head.
But it is nice to see, you know, there's some gaming legends here, developer-wise. Probably not so much today, because they're always here first on Saturday.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jim Bagley, who obviously I know pretty well because of the Double Dragon remake.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, like, meeting Jim Bagley today, what he has been working on and everything.
Yeah, he's been working on Pac-Manic Minor Man. Which is basically Manic Miner running on Pac-Man arcade hardware.
Right.
And I've had a quick go of it this morning, and you know, if you're into Manic Miner, it's a great version to play. It's just nice having it on an arcade cabinet. There's some lovely artwork on the side of the cabinet. We'll post some pictures up and possibly show some video. Yeah, just it makes a really good arcade game. But yeah, Jim Bagley's a legend, nice guy. He's quite shy. Mm-hmm. It's the first time I've actually spoken to him in the flesh, so to speak. But yeah, there's other guys here. You've got Mark Jones, who done graphics at Ocean. Simon Butler was here yesterday, another great Ocean graphic artist. Bill Harrison, who done the graphics on Chase HQ on Amstrad and Spectrum, amongst a few other games. So yeah, these are people, you know, I've been playing their games for years, you know, since I was a kid, and getting to meet them is, you know, these are your idols in a way.
Why don't you mention as well who actually liked one of these t-shirts, by the way, which costs $8.99 if you want to buy one?
Yeah, Bob Wakelin, who was the guy who done all the cover art for Ocean.
All the amazing ones, all sort of Rainbow Islands.
Yeah, all the ones you remember, New Zealand Story, Target Renegade, Operation Wolf, all of those. He saw the t-shirt, and this was before even, you know, we got speaking to him, but he said, I want one of those t-shirts, and he was really taken with the design,
yeah,
which was nice, you know, coming from an artist, he sees your work and yeah, he likes it.
It's
interesting.
When the modern world is taking its toll on me, I tune into the Retro Asylum podcast.
Is there any consoles or computers that you've not seen here today and surprised you've not seen?
I'm surprised. There's not many Amstrads. Sorry, Amstrad.
We saw one.
There's one Amstrad. There's two Amstrads floating about, plus the GX4000s. So, yeah, it's a shame there's not more of those, but pretty much everything is here. The other thing, which we've been talking about quite a bit recently, is these grandstands and...
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Nintendo Game & Watch. They've got all those here on display, and you can play them. And it's just great seeing these again in the flesh, because obviously with the internet you can see videos and...
But actually holding the real thing, like today I hold Atari Lynx, and it reminds me of, God, how big was it? Yeah. It was a powerful system for a time, but it was like this size.
Bigger than that. It was like, whoa.
And for those listening... Glenn is holding something else up, not something rude.
He didn't get something out.
But it's strange to say about the size of things. Me and Andy was discussing the size of certain controllers.
I was wondering what you were going to say.
Where am I going with this conversation? Now, a lot of the controllers seem smaller than what you remember, because obviously you were holding these when you was a kid and you had smaller hands. So
I think you're right. It's one of the games we were playing, because yesterday, Glenn, what actually happened was we were playing a game of Street Fighter 2. So it was me, I beat Swainy, I beat Damien from our forum, I beat Damien's sort of brother-in-law, and Tony from Retro Resistance.
All in a row.
Did you play it on?
On the Super Nintendo. But what I found, though, back in the day, I loved the Super Nintendo control pad, and I always felt like it was the best control pad, but it was really small in my hands playing that, and it just felt a little bit odd.
Especially used to the Xbox one. The Xbox one's pretty bulky and heavy, isn't it?
It has evolved. You can see the evolution. You know, like a Darwin sort of thing, the way we've evolved from apes. I'd love to do something like that, like from a joystick going to our control pad, then going to whatever, to what we have now, like the 360 control pads. But yeah, so what machines have you enjoyed playing today then, Glenn?
I enjoyed playing the Super Nintendo. I also enjoyed playing the CD32. I played that today. I also played Atari Jaguar today, and what else have I played? I played on the Spectrum today, and I also went round and played on a few arcades. Had a go at Daytona USA, and then I had a go. Oh, what game was it? Commando.
Commando.
I had a go at Commando today, and it looks like pinball balls they shoot at. They're funny. They really slowly come towards you to dodge that little pinball ball. Yeah. Well, it takes one pinball ball to hit, knock you down, isn't it?
One of the next things I want to talk about then, guys. Now. For those watching it, you know, obviously, you know, we're not going to get these things that we bought, but I want to talk about the things that we've purchased. Now, I want to start off with Dean. They've got, like, what's the name of the shop that they've got here, the one where you buy things?
Console Passion, is it?
I think it is Console Passion. Yeah.
Yeah, yesterday I picked up New Zealand Story on the Sega Master System. That was £7. It was boxed with the instructions, all sealed up, in great condition. I've been looking on eBay... And that was going for roughly around £10 plus postage and packaging. So in that sense, you know, I've probably got it a little bit cheaper. But as Glenn said it earlier on, some of the games are slightly marked up a bit higher. But
especially games consoles.
The actual hardware does seem to be slightly higher than what it should be. But games-wise, a lot of these games are boxed. They're in really good condition, and you can see what you're getting. Plus, as I've mentioned before on other podcasts, you know, it's always nice to physically see the game before you buy it.
It's okay seeing it on YouTube. It's okay seeing it on Google images, but actually hold the box again and thinking, wow, I remember these as a kid, picking them up in the shop thinking, should I buy this?
Well, why don't you tell us, have you got anything over the weekend, Glenn?
It's called Battle Moth for the Atari Jaguar CD.
And how much did you pay for that?
£20.
£20? Wow.
It's about-ish how much you pay for it. Probably a bit more, probably online, but it's about how much you pay for it. And I couldn't believe I'd come across it, because all the other games I was looking through for the Jaguar CD, it's all the games you actually get with the system.
Yeah.
But that, I came across that thing, I want this.
Yeah. I mean, me personally, I was having a look around. I've recently started my N64 collection. I started looking at some of the games, and they were a little bit pricier than they are on Amazon, really. And I was really tempted to pick up, I think it's called Body Harvest, and maybe a few other games. But then I decided I might as well go for a Game Boy game. And then I saw Pokemon Blue. Now, I was such a huge fan of Pokemon, Glenn. And Glenn laughed at me because I was 19 when I was playing Pokemon. 19,
just,
20.
If you played Pokemon when I was at school, you would have been, why are you playing Pokemon? It's for children.
It's a great game. It's a great RPG game. And I've told the story many a times that, you know, they only had one save slot. And what actually happened was years ago, my friend goes, can I play it? And I went, you can start a game, but don't save it. And he did save it. And since then, I hadn't played Pokemon. So I've got myself a Game Boy, and I can't wait to go home. And it can be something which, where I work, it's quiet. I can sit down and play Pokemon. So I'm really looking forward to that. And
do you know, when I'm looking around the show, I notice that the Acer and the computers and stuff, because I've seen the Commodore 64, you know, that's disappeared.
Yeah.
And then I've seen that somebody holding Atari Jaguar. So.
Yeah. Is there any systems that you would consider buying if you had that money lying around? What were the systems you would buy then?
I saw CD32.
Right.
And I think, should I buy that or not? And I'm thinking,
how much was that going
for? It was 65 quid.
Wow, okay.
And I also saw, what's it called? Atari 2600.
Yeah, 2600, yeah.
And I think that was going for 65.
Yeah, it's not bad. So,
and I also saw ColecoVision. I think that's about 65 also.
Yeah,
I won't mind having one of those.
You're going to put that in your Christmas list? Yeah, do you reckon Jackie will buy you that?
Oh no, it goes over the £50 limit she has for me.
Well, alright, so three systems that you've seen today, well, that you'd like over the weekend.
What I would like.
We're not saying this so people, our listeners, can send them in to us.
Well, you know, if they want to give away consoles,
we're not going to ask them.
They'd go to a good home. A PC Engine. I've always wanted one of those. They're dinky little things.
They're not really small.
Yeah,
this is a games cartridge.
Yeah,
I've heard of one today. It was like a credit card. How do you fit a game onto that? It's amazing.
It is absolutely amazing.
But that's a system I was always intrigued with when they, because they didn't really get officially launched over here. There was a place selling them, but it wasn't, you know, a nationwide launch. So I've always been interested in one of those, and if I had the money, I would get one of those. I still want to get a SNES, because I've never owned a SNES.
They have a SNES for sale there. I think it's about 40 quid, I think. 40,
That's a bit steep, I think.
I'd probably pick one up a bit cheaper. Because I never had a Nintendo Entertainment System, so you can get the converter for that. So that's something I'd like to get. As for a third system, I don't know, really. I mean, I've got a Spectrum indoors, probably a Commodore. Probably a Commodore 64.
Hey. Do you see Glenn's face for our listeners who are listening to this? Glenn's eyes lit up and he's smiling like a Cheshire cat, thinking, yes, another one's turned. Turn to the dark
side. Yeah, I wouldn't say I've turned. It's, you know,
I'm a bit like Darth Vader turned to the dark side.
You know, there's, every system has got decent games on it.
Yeah.
Obviously, we had a lot of fun with the 8-bit wars and rivalry, and you know, there's a lot of games on the Commodore 64 that just couldn't match up to the ZX Spectrum.
Yeah.
We always have a battle here with Quick Snacks, and I really enjoyed it. I loved it. It's a completely different game. Andy's trying to compare it to the Spectrum game. It's not the same game.
It's not. The Spectrum version's better.
It's like comparing an Ed Stein milkshake with a McDonald's milkshake.
Yeah.
Pales in comparison.
Target Renegade as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chase HQ.
Yeah.
Enduro Racer.
Yeah, there you go. But there's certain games on the Commodore that are much better than the Spectrum versions. And of course, you know, those are the versions, really. I'd like to give a try.
All right, you've got one for you there, Ben. All right, guys, let me quickly tell you the systems I'd like. The Atari, was it the Atari Junior?
Yeah, the 2600.
Beautiful looking machines, really slimline, sleek.
That's the one I looked at.
And it looks very modern, actually.
Considering a lot of consoles have aged badly,
the cosmetic and look of it. But I think I love it. And I've been playing quite a lot of it on emulation. And I'd love to actually have the system there because it's one of the ones I grew up playing. I'd love a Sega Mega Drive.
Yeah?
I'd love a Mega Drive.
I remember I was playing that as a kid. You know, I used to bring these around and play Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of kids used to do back in the day, bring their consoles around to their friends'
house. What did you think of Alex the Kid? Some people don't like it, some people love it.
I don't hate him as much as, say, other people do in other podcasts. I think, you know, as a game character, he sold a number of copies, and obviously he was no Mario beater, but, you know, he sadly got pushed aside. And the other system I'd like to have is Super Nintendo, actually, as
well.
I love my Super Nintendo. Great system.
I give you a tip buying a Super Nintendo. Make sure you look at the plastic, because a lot of Super Nintendos are going like this table. It's going yellow.
Yeah.
My Super Nintendo's in a reasonably good condition. It's slightly gone yellow at the front, but it has not turned ever
since. It's a way of treating it, so you make sure that it doesn't go like that.
I read it's all about it's the chemical reaction to the plastic.
Yeah, right. So it's the same way. The trouble is, Nintendo use plastic that does go a funny colour.
It's cheap
plastic.
They don't expect these machines to be still being used 30 years later. Or however.
I think the main thing is, as long as the system actually works fine. You know, unfortunately, they do yellow quite a bit. It's like
probably the worst for going yellow.
Yeah, they are. There was a Transformer toy, Jetfire.
Oh yeah,
years ago, and that was brilliant white when you bought it, and within a year or so, it went horrible yellow.
Yeah.
And you know, that's just one of those things. There's nothing you can do about it. You can treat it, but then, you know, would you want your console going brittle? And not that you're going to lean on it or anything, but it can be a bit dodgy. So as far as I'm concerned, as long as it plays fine, that's the main thing.
One thing I noticed, the Commodore 64's not gone badly yellow. The white models, the C64Cs, they tend to not go yellow as badly as the Super Nintendo.
I was going to say, because the Commodore 64 is always, to me, look like a Sainsbury's checkout machine.
They do, actually, the way it's just done there. But, yeah, I mean, overall, guys, this weekend, how have you found the overall thing, you know?
It's been enjoyable. I've enjoyed it. Like I said, some people have criticised, the way that this is heading with the modern side of things, but it's still bringing people together, and as we've said, there's a younger generation enjoying the retro scene, and hopefully they're going to get into it, and we've just got to promoting this sort of thing, I think.
Hello, this is Potty Boy, and you're listening to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum.
So, plans for the future for the show then, Glenn? Where do you see us 1 year happening? What do you want to see? More interviews? More community guests? What do you want to see? What is it you're expecting to give our audience?
I like to see more people from the community.
Yeah.
Because every story is interesting, because not everyone's story is the same.
Exactly, yeah.
Everybody's story is different how they got into gaming. I also like to see the people who program the games, make the games, and they explain their story, because their story is all different. It's not all the same. It's really, really interesting.
So where do you see the show going then?
Hopefully, boosting an audience, you know, getting a bit more popular than what it is.
Yeah.
Although we're doing great at the moment, and it's been great this weekend bumping into so many people who are listening to the show and are fans of the show. I just think we need to keep doing what we're doing. more interviews if possible, because as Glenn said, you know, everyone loves hearing everyone else's
story. And we have got an interview lined up, well, coming up. We're going to sort of play in a little bit later on in the podcast. Yeah. Before we, who's that we interviewed then?
That's with Mike Montgomery. He was the guy who set up the Bitmap Brothers. So anyone from the 16-bit era should know his games, such as Xenon 2,
Chaos Engine,
all those sort of games. You know, we've got a good interview with him.
Yeah,
that went really well. He's a really nice guy.
So yeah, I think what we're going to do, we're going to sort of play the interview basically. We've pre-recorded that.
UK's number one retro gaming podcast. With me today is Mike Montgomery from the Bitmap Brothers. First of all, I want to ask you how you got into computers and gaming. Where did you first learn to code?
Okay, obviously this story's been told many times, I used to work for a company called Woolies. They went bust a few years ago. I was a store manager. I got into computers because, as a store manager, one day a computer drawing, if you like, came and told me how to lay my store out. And I thought, hang on, this is my job. why should we have a computer telling me what to do? I'm 56 now, so, you know, when I got into the industry, I was quite old, yeah. If like I was in my mid-30s, and we didn't have computers at school, so I didn't know what it was. So I thought I'd go out and buy, you know, ZX81 was out. So I went and bought the ZX81 just to see what computer it was, but it does, you know. And basically, I taught myself to program it it took me about a year. By then, I bought the Spectrum, and done a few things, wrote a few programs myself. I wrote a disassembler, an assembler, and all sorts of things, as well as a word processor. It's really strange. You get to a point where you don't actually know how good you are, because I haven't got any friends that had computers.
Sure.
The only person I could talk about computers was the person that was selling Spectrum in their store, you know. But he knew nothing about computers either. So I decided I was buying a personal computer weekly, and I saw an advert in there for a computer programmer. So I thought, I'll go for that, just to see how good I am. It was a company called Leisure Genius. So I went up to London, had an interview, and I said, "Oh, thanks, guys, after the interview." And they went, "Well, don't you want a job?" And I went, "No, I just come here to find out how good I am." And they went, "You're very good, can you start Monday?" And I went, "No, I don't want a job." You know, and they said, "Well, when you come for the interview?" I said, "Literally, I just need to know if I'm doing the right thing." And they said, "Well, you are, you know, we would really like you to take you on." So I said, "No, I'm not interested." And then I walked out, went home on the train, lived in Clacton, and so it was about 2.5 hours. You know, I think it's kind of free in the head, doesn't it?
And then, twice.
So?
You're thinking twice.
I think, yeah. And I'm thinking about it, and I go, "I don't know about this." So anyway, I spoke to my wife, and she said, "Well, you know, you're bored at work because of computers. You're coming in and taking over your job. Why not give it a try?" So I said, "All right, then, I'll phone you up tomorrow." And I phoned her up, and I said, "How much are you paying?" And when they told me, I just laughed. I'm thinking, hang on a second, that means if I take this job, I'm going to lose 2/3 of my salary. I mean, I can't really afford that. So anyway, I just laughed at them and put the phone down and spoke to the wife. She says, "Well, I'm working, so, you know, it's a new opportunity, you know, go for it." So I went for it, you know, I phoned up and said, "Yeah, I'll go for it." Well, within a year, I doubled my salary. What was working at Woolies? No, I doubled my salary, but, you know, this was a major jump for them.
And they made the right decision,
and I was hardworking. It was a small little publisher, the partners used to go out for lunch, and I used to like, man the phones, and I used to do all the sales. I actually sell, I sell more of the products than their sales manager in the lunchtime. And then we eventually got bought by Virgin Games, and I went to Virgin Games as head of programming there.
Okay, so how did Bitmap Brothers actually come about?
The Bitmap Brothers came about with my two partners, Eric and Steve. In 1983, Steve worked on a computer game called Scrabble on the Spectrum. Leisure Genius did Scrabble on the C64, the BBC, what else was around about that time? All the 8-bit computers. Anyway, I did all the Scrabble, and I got to know Steve because he supplied some of the code from Scion. And the strange thing about doing Scrabble is I'm totally dyslexic, but I never actually told anyone, so that they didn't actually know for many years that the program was dyslexic. And Eric did some graphics for Monopoly we were working on, so we worked together for a little bit, not as the Bitmap Brothers, and then we came up with the idea, or I think it was Eric came up with the idea of doing Zeon, and Steve did the ST version and I did the Amiga version, and we just went from there. Really.
Yeah. Was Zeon actually based on any other games that influenced by?
I can't tell you that, can I? We spent a long time in arcades.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, there was influence from the arcades there. One particular game that I can't remember what it's called. I really can't remember.
The game was converted to the 8-bit formats. Did you have any say?
Well, yes, we did have say in those. I mean, we signed off everything. I mean, one thing the Bitmap Brothers is very strong at is keeping its own IP and making sure everything's as good as it can do.
Yeah.
Sometimes you've got to bend a little bit, but you know. And so, now the 8-bit version of one of them was done by Darren Warburton, I believe. Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the company name, but we can't.
No. I was on a planet a couple of weeks ago. A lot of your games feature famous music tracks. Did the music ever influence the game at all, or was it brought in after
the game? No, the music was actually composed for us. We approached all the artists, bar one actually. Magic Pocket's doing the do.
Betty Do.
Yeah.
I remember that.
The difference, that one actually fitted the game when we went to them, right. Where all the other stuff was written for the, particularly with the game. But we joined up with a company called Real King Records, and so you'll find that all the stars were actually signed up to Real King Records at the time. So we had the access to actually get to them. And it was good, it was really good because we got the music that we wanted for the game, and the artists got into the games industry for like made this really good tracks.
Yeah. Did you have a favourite?
My favourite is Into the Wonderful.
Chaos Engine.
Oh, the Chaos Engine, yeah, that's my favourite by Joy.
Do you have a favourite game out of the series that you've produced over the years?
My favourite game is a really difficult question to answer because I've done, you know, we've done quite a few games over the years, and these are I'm only going to talk about Bitmap Brothers games for this, and well, actually, my favourite out of all the games I've done a Bitmap Brothers game anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But I really enjoyed working on Steel Soldiers. I did all the publicity and everything. I really, really enjoyed that project. And then later on, when we did Speedball for the Xbox,
yeah.
I actually preferred that. I preferred the version that we actually did, and it became my favourite game, especially as I beat all the journalists.
Yeah. See, Amiga's a cult classic, so everyone tends to like that version.
I mean, I think, you know, the Big Mac Brothers pushed 16-bit to its limits from the very beginning, you know, with the style of graphics, with all the sound, as well as all the programming and stuff. And, you know, I think the difference between the ST and the Amiga, there is a big difference, but it was down to the machine. We pushed the ST as far as we could push it, and we pushed the Amiga as far as we could push it as well.
Did you have a favourite out of the two?
Personally, I did more work on the Amiga than the ST. The ST was easier.
Yeah.
But the Amiga, I really enjoyed using, you know, doing all the graphic programming with the copy list and doing things with interrupts and sound and stuff like that. It's a machine you could really, you know, get your hands into. It was like, you know, the first thing you do is knock out the operating system and then write your own. And that's fantastic for any type of console or anything. You know, there are no rules. The rules you make yourself.
Yeah. A lot of your games have appeared, well, so a lot, a couple have appeared on the iPhone. Is there any future plans for re-releases?
Yeah, I'm eventually going to have all my catalogue out on the iPhone. It's something I don't want to do too quickly, and we'll do it over time. I'm going to do a combination of things. It's going to be, some of them are going to be pure ports, and then some of them are going to be updated. I mean, when pure ports will probably update the graphics and stuff like that, but they'll still be, if you like, you know, 2D down on platforms, because I think that there's two markets here on the iPhone. We have like the retro market, where people want the original stuff, and then you've got the people that want you to do something different with the original stuff. Well, and every time that I've done, you know, I've brought out Speedball a couple of times, and I've got criticised because it wasn't the original, and then criticised because actually it was an update on the original, but the original people didn't like it. I mean, it's just like, to be quite honest,
you can't. It's one of those things.
You can't be.
Do you still code yourself?
I run a company called, I'm development director of a company called Chromativity, and we do motion games and iPhone and Android phones and stuff like that. For the last year, I've actually only been doing C# in tools. I haven't actually wrote any code in games, but I think they might change. I miss it too much.
One last question then: would you ever be tempted to write an Amiga game again?
That's a very, very interesting question. Until I came to this show, I'd probably say no. But actually, there's a lot of old memories that come back, and I think maybe when I'm retired in a couple of years' time, or a bit more, I think I might have a go, actually. Strangely enough, I've been thinking about Z80 lately, about writing something in Z80 in assembler, because I started off as an assembler programmer. I've written assembler for virtually every single processor, up to probably only about 5 years ago, and I do miss that. I find the high level stuff in, you know, C and C# and C++ is a really nice language to use, but I run a real time recompiler, which basically, on the PC about 4 years ago, which basically is total self modifying code, and I spent about 3 months actually writing this, and I got to the point that I could write assembler routines faster than C++ routines. So I was actually writing, where I was doing the interfacing, which should have been C++, I actually wrote them in assembler. So it's strange.
So is there any, in particular, is there an X80 based machine that you're thinking about? Or?
I don't know, no, just not really. No. I probably, to be fair, by the time I actually come to do it, I'll probably go to 68,000 because it's much better.
Have you ever been tempted to write a Commodore 64 game, or have you written a Commodore 64 game?
Commodore 64, I was involved with a Scrabble, Monopoly,
I'm the Commodore 64 person, these two are the Sinclair Spectrum people, but you can answer them.
Well,
which one do you think was the better system to program?
The Commodore 64 is much better. But the reason it's for a programmer, the reason why 64 is because it's very similar to the Amiga, is that you can just take over with no rules.
Sure.
You see, well, you can do that with the Spectrum, but the Spectrum really didn't have... the machine wasn't that powerful. I mean, if you're thinking about it, probably the one of the Amstrads became more powerful. The Amstrad CP,
one to one.
Well, it's the one that had the sort of like the first type of floppy disk in it.
I know what you mean, but I can't recall it.
I can't remember it. I can remember it was a green box with where you plugged it in the side, and that was a pretty good machine actually for its time. The operating system was CPM, so once again the operating system was on the disk, so you'd knock it out within three instructions.
Right, one very last question. I've already said that.
Sorry,
yeah. But I just wanted to know what you thought of the event today.
I'm going to be really, really honest about this, and actually, I'm lost for words. I found. This must have been the weirdest thing I've ever done in my life. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I actually mean that in a really sort of like, I don't know, weird way. It's like when I first came in, the show was empty and there was just desks there with computers. And I've been to something like this before where, it was very retro and there was people sitting around on C64s and stuff like that. But actually, looking around, there's all types of machines here. There's actually everything. And there's the best thing in the world, there's like loads of pinball machines. And sadly, I've got RSI and Tennis Elbow in Seoul at the moment. And I'm itching the other on those pinball machines, because that's my favourite. But I just dare, because I know it's just going to damage my arm even more. And then you look at it, one of the really nice things is, though, maybe I shouldn't say this in some respects, but there's no phone games. There's no phones in.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's actually playing on either old consoles these games used to come back from Nintendo. This is called a Watch. Watch.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple of those there, which is really nice to see. And then we've also got the show here. We've got, they've got the new Nintendo, the Wii U here. I mean, it's first time in England. I mean, that's pretty good for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And you've also got Halo 4.
Yeah.
So there's a big interest in it. But the other thing is quite interesting is actually the age of the people. I'm 56, but most of the people here are like young.
My age.
Yeah, probably young. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't know how old you are, but there's not many people over 20. Like, there's some really old people here as well from the retro, the retros, and it's quite nice to see that there's a few gangs here, we've all been t-shirts and playing. And there's big competitions out there. I can hear all the roar. And it's brilliant. It's like, in our industry at the moment, we're going through a transition period. We're waiting for the new machines to come out, if they come out, if they're even gonna, is a Xbox gonna have a new machine that's cool to use? But, when we don't know, and it's the same with the Sony PlayStation, we know the Nintendo's plans. It's good to see that this industry, is actually thriving still. Alright, box sales and in general games are actually on decline, mobile games are on the rise. But because mobile is a very different, it's a very different audience as well. I don't think you get serious game players who play a game.
No. It's really more of an on the go thing. I want to catch a boss.
Yeah.
Play
a game. But with using your phone, with your television, and this is your controller,
yeah,
then we might see serious games with hardcore gamers playing on the phone. And the phone can easily become, you know, the next console. So.
Lovely. Wow, thanks for that. That is great.
That's perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Tell everyone before we move into name the game. So you guys think of some games, and I'll tell everyone basically where I see the show going. We've got two more retro hosts. We've got Retro Darren, we've got Matt Dinaris, and they're going to actually help us because again we've got different perspectives. So that way you don't just hear our story all the time. We can rotate it. It becomes easier.
And we're going to shake things up a bit, I think.
Yeah, because you're going to become a dad. I'm going to become a dad. You never know what he's going to get up to.
Well, my life is going at 100 miles per hour. Now, people wondering, why have I not appeared on the podcast recently? Well, I've been having a very busy life lately. I've been on holiday for 10 days with my lovely Jackie. I had a brilliant time. The only thing Retro Games I did is there was a Sega Rally machine in the building, so I had a good game of Sega Rally. One screen was working though at the time, so only one person can play.
Right, so what we're going to do now, we're going to move on to my personal favourite section of the podcast, which is Name the Game. I thought of a game in my head. Now, guys,
can we answer any both games?
Yeah, it's basically you take turns and whoever gets it right wins, basically. And then we'll rotate it between the two of us, and we'll do it that way. So, for our listeners and our viewers who haven't seen or heard this before, basically, we each come up with a game in our head. I can only answer them yes or no, and these guys need to ask me questions and try and guess the game. Today, it's even more competitive because I've got my co-host here. So, guys, can you name that game?
Is it a Spectrum game?
Nope.
Is it an arcade game?
Nope.
Is it a Super Nintendo game?
Yes.
Is it got a monkey in it?
Yes.
Donkey Kong Country?
No.
Game with a monkey in it on a Super Nintendo.
That has it down a lot.
Yeah. So Super Mario Kart.
You got it. He's redeemed himself. Now, don't forget, guys, you can play this at home. See if you can try and guess it. Dean is on top form there, so yeah, well done, Dean.
I almost got it and all.
Sadly, you got beaten. Right, so Dean, have you thought of the game?
I have thought of the game.
Right, so I'll go first this time. Is that an arcade game?
It is.
Is it by Capcom?
No.
My turn. Oh. Let me guess. Has it got a blonde woman in it?
Not too sure she's blonde. There is a woman.
She might not be a natural blonde.
That narrows it down a lot. If you guess on that one for me.
She's blonde in the sequel.
Double Dragon?
No.
Donkey Kong?
No.
An arcade game? Is it a shooter?
No.
Is that a platformer?
No.
Oh. But it's got a blonde woman.
Blonde woman in it.
Yeah, guys, play this with us.
Is it a beat 'em up?
No.
Oh, God, is it based on a TV show?
No.
Was it sequels?
It was sequels, yes.
Right, that was it down. There's got sequels.
Sequels aren't as good. There's a clue.
Renegade?
No. Not a beat-em-up.
Is this one woman the main character of the game?
Not as such, no. There's probably three lead characters, I could say, but... Let me give you a big hint. You don't actually... I can't remember if you get to see... I don't think you get to see her. You get to hear her.
Hear her?
Yeah.
Was this converted into the 8-bit computers?
It was.
Was it on the Spectrum?
It was.
Was it 128K?
There was a 48K version as well, but it was a rather impressive 128K version. Come on, guys, I'm giving you loads of...
I don't know. I don't want to give up because Glenn's not giving up.
I'm trying to look for my games catalogue in my head. Open, open.
Is that an RPG, sort of?
No.
Oh, that'll do. Is it Outrun?
No.
Because that has a blonde woman in it. Yeah.
Close.
Yeah.
I've
changed the tune. Alright, so why don't we move on to your section?
I thought you were going to guess, man. I've got a right one for you.
Oh, God, alright.
Right!
So, since you got it, go on, mate, you can go first.
Okay, is it a console game?
Yes!
Oh, okay, I was going to say, quick snack on a C64.
it's not that bloody easy.
Floppies.
Is it a SNES game?
Yes!
Have you given him the answers? This was like that scene from Ghostbusters.
Is it a driving game?
No.
There you go.
Is it a platform game?
Yes.
That narrows it down.
Has it got a sequel?
Yes.
Is it actually by Nintendo?
No.
Is it by Capcom?
No.
Was it an arcade conversion?
No.
Oh dear, you've got me.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one.
Oh yeah, that's one easy one.
Is it a two-player game?
I don't know, I think you can. But you can't play on the same screen, that's a clue.
Your turn. Is it Bomberman?
No.
I think we're on the right sort of thing there.
So it's a platform game.
Yes.
Right.
And it's not by Nintendo.
Does it feature a forest?
Yes, at one part of it.
It doesn't help me.
Why did I ask that question?
Does it feature trees?
Donkey Kong Country?
No.
Adventure Island?
No.
Was that a really well-known platformer?
On the Super Nintendo, it was. But I give you a clue, on the PlayStation 1, the game was terrible. And then I give you another
clue. Engine.
No. It was like a Mario 64 type of game, but horrible on the PlayStation 1.
Earth Engine.
Steve Benway even reviewed it and he laughed about it.
Did it appear on the Mega Drive?
Yes.
It's a 3D platformer.
I give you a clue. I picked up the box at the last game.
Bubsy.
Bubsy.
Yes.
That looks slightly all done.
Hello, everybody. To be honest with you, Retro Asylum.
It's absolutely amazing.
Anything like that. Back in the day. Informative, funny, and really takes you back.
It's absolutely amazing.
Things like that, and things like that.
Amazing, amazing.
Things like that, and things like that.
Retro Asylum. Amazing, amazing. Absolutely superb.
To be perfectly honest with you, things like that, things like that.
Amazing, amazing.
Retro Asylum.
Alright, so what we're going to do before we round this thing up. We're going to announce the winner of the Amiga 500. Now, there was a number of different ways we could actually do this. Now, I told people you could email me at therealloperomaniac@googlemail.com. You could leave us an iTunes review, which has been fantastic. We've got 48 iTunes reviews now. And the other way you could do it was leave us a little soundbite. I will play the soundbites throughout the show as well. And the other way, and the way we're going to do this was, is basically pick a number between 1 and 48. Go on, Glenn, I'll let you do it. Just random number between 1 to 48.
I'll pick number 12.
Number 12. Okay, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to go off through my phone and then look for our 12th iTunes review. This is completely not as scripted, so bear with us. The winner, and I've done it from iTunes. I asked Glenn, you know, to give me a completely random number, and the number you said was 12.
Number 12.
And the 12th that's come up here on iTunes is a Best Retro Podcast by DJ Comfort. So DJ Comfort, congratulations. You're the winner of the Amiga 500. And let me quickly read out his review once again. He basically said, "Been listening to this podcast for around 5 years. I'm so glad I came across this. Great host and fun podcast, full of nostalgic memories of my Speccy days. I have a 5-year-old who can't get enough of Super Mario Land on the SNES and a 9-year-old girl who loves Last Ninja on the C64. Only downside is that I found this podcast too early and I've listened to every episode." So yeah, DJ Comfort, what I need you to do then is contact me at therealloperomaniac@googlemail.com or andy@retroasylum.com or send me a PM, but you need to prove to me that you are DJ Comfort before I send you this. And once you've proven to me that you are DJ Comfort, I will send you the Amiga 500. So yeah. And what do we announce the next prize we've got up, which we're giving away for episode 30, Dean?
Yep, okay, the next prize is, get ready for it, it's a Nintendo 64.
Yay!
With a few games.
What games?
I can't remember.
Yeah, so it's a few classic games.
Yeah, there's some good games in there. There's a couple that aren't so great, but mainly all good.
Right, so I think we should start wrapping up the show. Guys, I'm going to, for the guys that can't really see this who are listening to this, I'm about to shake Dean's hand and I want to say thank you very much, Dean, for doing this.
It's
thank
you very much. Massive pleasure working with you too.
Absolute pleasure.
As well.
So guys, yeah, why don't you say your thank yous to everyone that's listening to the show?
I like from the bottom of my heart to say thank you to everybody who listens to our show. I'm glad that we can make your life a little bit easier, a little bit easier by listening to our show. And it's been a big privilege to work with two great people, Andy and Dean Swain.
Thank you.
I also like to thank everybody on the forum that supports us as well. It keeps us going and it keeps us turning up for retro games.
What about you, matey?
Big thank you to Damien and Darren, who have financially supported us recently.
Definitely, we can't, yeah. Enough for that.
Yeah, that's great. Again, we've mentioned before. Big thank you to everyone who came up and shook my hand yesterday and come and said hello to me and Andy and Glenn. Well, that's asking more back, Glenn.
Please. Yeah.
Please do spread the word, guys. If you enjoy the show, you know, let other retro fans know about it. Obviously, we're not going to appeal to everyone out there, but, you know, like-minded people who are not totally obsessed, but like to do this as a pastime.
Yeah.
Or even if you just like listening to this in the background whilst you're driving or whilst at work.
At the gym, wow.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'd like to say thank you once again to my two wonderful co-hosts there. We've got Retro Darren and Dinaris, who's wandering around the venue at some point, which we've got to try and find. I'd like to say thank you to Retro Resistance. I'd like to say thank you to the Odd Pod Show. I'd like to thank absolutely everyone on the forum and site. Special big thanks to Damien and to Darren, our forum moderator. And we have got a PayPal button on the front page of the site. Like I said, if you can find spare change beyond the sofa or in your pocket, pop that down there, and every little bit helps. It's been 1 year, and things can only get better, basically.
Yeah, we're looking forward to the next year and what it has to throw at us.
All right, thanks very much, guys. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. Bye-bye. Take care. And keep listening.